Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
One of the great catchphrases that was kind of born out of the 2017 season was the idea of rat poison. Nick Saban said it at one point, and then it seems like 5 minutes later, the whole world was using that all the time, and everybody sort of understood exactly what it meant. Saban has a way of kind of doing that with some of his weekly press conference remarks, and it's sort of a stickiness that all of a sudden the entire world's kind of paying attention to what he said. Go back to October here when, the idea of media compliments, the media saying good things about you, Saban wanting to avoid that, and he had a very Saban-like way of describing just how detrimental that could have been to his team. Let me play this for you as a reminder of that.
I'm trying to get our players to listen to me instead of listening to you guys. All that stuff you write about how good we are and all that stuff they hear on ESPN, it's like poison. You know what I mean? It's like taking poison, like rat poison. All right, so I'm asking them, are you going to listen to me or are you going to listen to these guys about how good you are?
So I don't know if the idea of the rat poison is really real, that it's bad for a team to hear too much good stuff said about it. I don't know how real that is. I'm assuming, though, that it's partially true. It is partially real that staying focused and staying hungry, maybe even staying to a degree humble, my guess is that is a little harder to do when folks are patting you in the back and talking about how good you are. Maybe conversely, for the team that's not hearing a lot of that kind of stuff, maybe that does give just a little bit of an extra edge, just a little bit of an extra competitive advantage as it works its way through an offseason. If that is true, then that's good news for Georgia because there is a lot of rat poison being tossed out in the direction of some of Georgia's SEC rivals here. Let me start with Danny Cannell. And some of y'all know Danny as a bit of an SEC hater. I mean, listen, there is a degree to which all of this is just pro wrestling. We're all sort of playing a character. We're all just sort of playing a role here. And Cannell has decided when it comes to SEC fans, he wants to play the heel. He wants to be the villain. He wants to, always kind of stir the pot in sort of an anti-SEC way. And frankly, I guess it's probably working. Now, Cannell doesn't have a job that I know of, but he is at least, establishing a brand of, hey, the one thing you know about Danny Cannell is this is a guy that's going to say bad things about the SEC, except for when he doesn't. He's on what I assume is his radio program on Sirius XM. It's the ESPNU Sirius XM channel. He's on there talking about Alabama. And listen to this noted SEC hater, Danny Cannell, the biggest critic of the SEC probably in all of the mainstream media, but listen to how profusely he praises the Crimson Tide here. Dare I say that he tosses a big old dose of rat poison in the direction of Tua Tagovailoa in Alabama? Take a listen to this.
Ultimately, the one thing I thought about, there were two things. One, Saban is the best coach of our time, the best coach. And two, he's going to win the next two in a row because this is the first time he'll have a quarterback who is much, much more than either a game manager as he had in Greg McElroy and AJ McCarron or a dual threat guy that really is limited passing like he had with Blake Sims or Jalen Hurts. And if what we get in that half, which I'm assuming it is because we all heard about Tua and how great he was and the expectation and the hype, if he gets that type of play out of him, they're going to be unstoppable. They really are because defensively, no matter what happens, no matter how many guys leave, they're going to load up. They're going to have some weapons offensively, so they'll be able to surround it. It's always, for me, has been with Bama, has been, well, they're just offensively, they don't do a whole lot. It's not exciting. If they can start doing stuff like that, they're going to score 60 points a game next year.
Well, there you go, y'all. I don't know what you're planning on doing for the next 24 months, but now we can take up a new hobby. We can learn cross stitching or learn chess or whatever it is you want to do. You've got 2 years that have just been sort of opened up because we now know, according to Danny Cannell, how the next two seasons and not just the SEC, but all of college football are going to play out. Alabama's going to win the next two straight national championships. They're going to score 60 points a game. And I guess based on two quarters and an overtime, Tua Tagovailoa is now the greatest quarterback of all time in college football. I mean, I'm glad to have my free time back. I don't have to worry about the next two college football seasons because Danny Cannell has apparently seen the future and is going to tell me exactly how all this stuff is going to work out. Obviously, I say that with a degree of sarcasm here because while I'm going to be just as impressed as anybody with what Tua did in the second half in the overtime for Alabama, and Alabama's going to be a grizzly bear to deal with no matter what every single year. I mean, there is almost an unavoidable, need to notice that what Kanell is tossing out is the exact same kind of rat poison Nick Saban talked about earlier in the year, because college football is not that easy to predict. And, you know, to act like that Alabama has somehow distanced itself in a great way from Georgia because it won by 3 points in overtime, and all of a sudden now a team like Georgia is looking up helplessly at this runaway train that is Alabama for the next couple of years, I mean, I don't think that reflects the reality that any of us have experienced here in the 2017 season. And I think that, you know, Danny Kanell comes off a little silly by, you know, making it sound like that there's some sort of foregone conclusion to what Alabama is going to be able to do over the next couple of years. But wait, that's not all, because Kanell is not the only one tossing around something that I think that Georgia fans are going to find interesting. You've also got Auburn coach Gus Malzahn, who is in Houston, and I guess the truth is all these awards run together. I'm sure as a college football, you know, talker for a living, I should be able to keep some of this stuff straight, but apparently he's in Houston because he's a finalist for one of those Coach of the Year awards. I can't keep all this straight. There's 9 million of these awards, but he's there, and while in Houston for this ceremony or this, you know, whatever, he goes on a Houston sports radio station. The question comes up of Alabama and Georgia in the national championship game, and Gus Malzahn is good enough to let us all know that he thought there was only one team in the country good enough to beat Alabama, and it was his own. Here is Gus Malzahn saying a very Gus Malzahn-like thing.
We got a lot of guys coming back, and, you know, we felt all along this year that we were the only team that could beat Alabama. Of course, they ended up being that way, and we got a lot of guys coming back. You know, I know they're very hungry, and anytime you've been close and you have everybody coming back or a lot of guys coming back, it really helps you. And I know we're going to be a hungry team. Now, you got to earn it in our league. The SEC West is a monster. Every week you got to bring your lunch, and but I really like where we're at.
So, listen, the SEC is apparently all taken care of for 2018. You've got one team that's going to score 60 points a game and can't be stopped. And if they can be stopped, apparently the only team that can beat them is Gus Malzahn's Auburn team, based on Malzahn's own assessment of the situation. Never mind the fact that Georgia beat Auburn 28-7 in the SEC championship game. Malzahn sees his team uniquely capable of beating Alabama, despite the fact that, you know, Georgia came with an eyelash of doing that itself. Now, a lot of this is mostly in fun. I think that, you know, Malzahn has a right to feel good about his team, and Danny Kanell's got a right to say about Alabama whatever he wants to say. But I do think that Georgia fans might take a bit of comfort in, you know, Malzahn poking at his chest a little bit and folks acting like, you know, that Alabama is some invincible force. Because I think that Kirby Smart, underneath all of that hype, I think that Kirby Smart delivered his own message on Monday after the game. It was a disappointing night for Georgia. There's no doubt about that. When you get close to winning a national championship, it's probably a good idea to go ahead and finish it off, because you're never guaranteed of being back in that spot again. But most of us, I think, believed Kirby Smart when he said this.
You know, I can't say enough about the remarkable senior class. These two young men sitting next to me, they meant more to Georgia than yards. A lot of heart and soul, a lot of fire. Sonny Michel came over and talked to the group several times during the game, inspired those guys. But in overtime, we didn't finish when we had to, and Alabama did. And to give them credit, but I think everybody can see that Georgia's going to be a force to be reckoned with. I'm very proud of this team and this university, and we're not going anywhere.
So Kirby Smart says everyone can see that Georgia's going to be a force to be reckoned with. I'm not so sure right now what the definition of everyone is, but apparently doesn't include Danny Kanell, and it may not include Auburn coach Gus Malzahn, which is probably just the way that Kirby Smart wants it. You know, I love what Mike Johnson said yesterday about the motivation that his 2008 Alabama team got from losing to Florida in the SEC championship game. And, you know, they saw replays of that game over and over again, on and on, you know, week after week, month after month, through those hard, cold winter months when you're in the weight room, leading into spring practice and then on the field. And for Georgia, these next few months are going to be incredibly significant. New leaders are going to have to emerge. New desire, new intensity is going to have to be reborn here to kind of get back to the spot to beat Auburn again, who will be a formidable challenger. Gus Malzahn's not wrong when he sort of brags on his own team there. And Danny Kanell's not completely wrong when he says with Tua Tagovailoa at quarterback, all of a sudden Alabama's a far different different animal to deal with than it's been in the past. Yeah, they probably are even tougher to beat now because they have a more capable passing quarterback in all likelihood when it comes to Tua Tagovailoa. But let's not act like two quarters of football dooms Georgia for the end of time. I think Georgia's going to be back in a big way in 2018 as well. And these three teams we just mentioned, Alabama, Georgia, and Auburn, will be battling it out. And then they will be fighting for that spot back in Atlanta, that spot in the college football playoff. But folks shouldn't be too quick to write off Georgia just because the second half of this game on Monday didn't go the way Dawg fans wanted it to. My name is Brandon Adams. This is Dawg Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Good to be with you here today. Whether you're watching us on video at 10 a.m. on the Dawg Nation Facebook page, listening to us on the radio at noon on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or checking us out in podcast form, iTunes, SoundCloud, I'll post the show for you at theworldfamousdognation.com. We try to make Dawg Nation Daily easy for you to find. We're glad you found us today as we roll towards National Signing Day. A big time coming up for Georgia recruiting. We'll actually talk some UGA recruiting a little later on in our program today. And if you want to hear more UGA recruiting talk, the place to be for that is this upcoming Tuesday night at the Marlowe's in Buford for our Marlowe's Countdown to Signing Day event. I want to tell you all about this. This is going to be a lot of fun. It's this upcoming Tuesday, January 16th from 6 to 8 p.m., Marlowe's in Buford. That's the Mall of Georgia location. It's 3333 Buford Drive. Once again, 3333 Buford Drive there in Buford, Georgia, right behind the Mall of Georgia. Jeff Sintel will be there. He and I will be having special Facebook Live broadcast, off-air, kind of off-the-record type conversation where Jeff lets some secrets sort of slip out. That's always a lot of fun. Special guest, my understanding, is slated to be there. I don't know who it is, but Jeff always delivers in a big way when it comes to those special guests. We've had Dominic Blaylock. We've had Chris Smith was a great guest for us at the Marlowe's at Emory Point. We've had some terrific guests. Last year was Andrew Thomas. It was Trey Blunt. It was Devontae Wyatt. I mean, we had all these great recruits to come show up at our Marlowe's events. It's going to be a lot of fun on that as well. We had J.D. Bertrand the other day, by the way, as well, at the Marlowe's in Roswell. So you get the idea of the kind of guests we've had. Another big-time guest expected to be with us this upcoming Tuesday. Also, our friends from Tailgate Apparel, who I talk about in downtown Athens a lot, they're going to be on hand as well. My understanding is they've got a few giveaways for us, too. So a lot of fun coming up. Marlowe's on Tuesday at Buford for our Countdown to Signing Day event. Jeff Sintel, me, special guests, and you as we get ready for our National Signing Day coming up in February. All right, I've got Seth Emerson coming up here on the program in a moment. Before we do that, let me take care of a little bit of a, I'm going to call it a news roundup. I can't think of a better way to describe this. There's just a few little tidbits I kind of want to get to here, all worth probably at least mentioning for a moment. Rashad Roundtree, the sometimes Georgia defensive back, sometimes Georgia linebacker, who's dealt with a lot of injuries, I guess, here during the 2017 season. Roundtree's football career has come to an end. He tweeted out this message: as a result of a number of concussions, with a heavy heart, I announced that my journey in the path of football has come to an end. As a child, all my dreams involved playing football, and it deeply saddens me that I can't play anymore. Heart goes out to a Roundtree that his football career is not going to finish up the way that he wanted it to. Obviously, injuries are a tough thing to deal with. And for Roundtree, you know, also, it seems like he was a great athlete that had a hard time kind of finding that position at Georgia. Sometimes, you know, it just doesn't work out that way. You certainly wish him well in the future with his life after football and appreciate the contribution that he's made to the Georgia program. I also thought this tweet from Bruce Feldman was pretty interesting about Aaron Feld. Feld, of course, is the Georgia assistant strength and conditioning coach, and he kind of became famous during the playoff because of the big mustache. Georgia fans were familiar with that. A lot of folks outside the program came to know about that. What Feldman writes, though, is that he's expected to become Oregon's new strength coach. So, like, he'll take the full-time job, apparently, at Oregon, according to Bruce Feldman, after being the assistant at UGA. And I'm always very, very respectful of the job that strength and conditioning coaches do. I think that strength and conditioning is, in addition to getting stronger and getting faster, I think it's also a lot of ways the head coach of the offseason, you know, the guys who have more contact with players during the winter months than the actual coaching staff does. So Feld leaving is a potential point of interest here because you want to make sure your strength and conditioning staff remains strong. And if this does indeed happen, as Feldman's reporting it might, then we certainly wish him well, too. I also saw where Davin Bellamy has applied for a trademark for his famous Humble Your yourself quote. We all remember from the Rose Bowl what he told Baker Mayfield at the end of the game, and so I love the humble yourself line that Bellamy used. I hope he can make some money off that as a trademark. The problem is sometimes these things have a way of and you know how quickly the news cycle kind of runs through. Sometimes people have a tendency to forget about these phrases after a little while, but maybe Bellamy can make himself a little bit money on that if he does indeed get that trademark. I'll also mention briefly here a little bit of bad news. Georgia loses in basketball last night on the road at Missouri. You know, I'll be honest with you, the game came out at 9 p.m. I sort of fell asleep before this one got into its crucial moments, but it sounds like Georgia had some struggles here in the first half I was watching. It was not a beautiful display of offensive basketball, but Georgia's still a pretty strong record, comes back home to play on Saturday against South Carolina, and so we'll see how that plays out after Georgia does lose on the road at Missouri last night. So a lot going on with Georgia. We're obviously trying to cover it all here at Dog Nation Daily. Good to have you with us on the program today, and as we promised, hope you enjoy Seth Emerson right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
And Seth Emerson does join us here on Dog Nation Daily, and we're kind of getting to that time of year where you start paying attention to some of the Georgia players, the decisions to make, who sticks around for another year at Georgia, who moves on to the NFL, or maybe in this case, who moves on to a transfer home. Seth, I'll welcome you to the program, but I'll also ask you, Seattle Times had kind of a, I thought, sort of a weirdly worded report about Jacob Eason going to Washington. Can you give us any kind of insight into, I know Eason's not really said a whole lot publicly about this, but, I mean, from your perspective, what is the timeline for Eason, and how soon might we hear something from him about this?
Well, I thought we could hear something pretty quickly, and I wasn't shocked by that report, but it hasn't been confirmed, and as we talk here on Thursday morning, nothing's come out. I don't know if, and that goes for all the pro decisions coming up. I don't know if it's just because Georgia was so late in its season and involved in everything. On the other hand, Alabama had a slew of news yesterday with their guys, and obviously they had their season go as long as Georgia's. So it may just be that a bunch of guys are still deciding, still getting information. If you take guys like DeAndre Baker at their word and told me they were, you know, still needed to talk to Kirby and get more information, I would tend to believe that these guys had a pretty good idea what they were doing before the championship game. That's usually how it works. That you spend that time over finals and before bowl practice, kind of gathering information. And then over the Christmas break, you go back to your family and you basically make a decision, and then you basically clam up when the media asks you about it. But some guys may not have made a full decision. I think we all know Jacob Eason will leave. I mean, that's just, you know, I guess foregone conclusion seems to be the way I would put it. Obviously, he will leave. But where he goes and everything, I mean, it doesn't surprise anybody if he ends up back in his home state, obviously. And I would expect something to be official on that pretty soon.
When it comes to, you know, another subject that's kind of been on the mind of a lot of Georgia fans lately, look, I'll tell you, I do this show from the perspective, obviously, of a fan. And as a fan, the one rule I try to occupy is that not to make too big of a deal of officiating one way or another, because that can be some sort of a maddening deal, because there's not really very much you can do about that. But in your second glance piece, and you're very much, you know, much more certainly objective than I'm going to try to be, you even pointed out that there were some calls in this game that obviously went against Georgia. You've also got this sort of scuttlebutt on the internet about this officiating crew being reprimanded by the Big Ten after a game, I believe it was in 2002. I'm assuming that report's accurate. It's been cited by a lot of mainstream media type people. I mean, what is a Georgia fan to do with all of this information, both calls that went against Georgia, the idea that this officiating crew had problems before? I mean, what do you make of all that?
Well, here's one thing I know. The stuff going around that the head referee, I think Dan Pepperon, or I don't know how to exactly, but he was not fired in 2002. There was, I think, like the Purdue student newspaper reported that, and some other people have run with it. I mean, Google is a wonderful thing. It can get you information that's correct, but sometimes it can lead you down the wrong road. There was a story in the Chicago Tribune two seasons ago, where the Big Ten head of officials said, you know, basically specifically cited that, like, that wasn't true. That what happened was there were some bad calls in a game in 2002. He was head of that crew. I don't know how many people that were on that crew 15 years ago were working that game on Monday night, but that official was benched for one game, and then he came back. He was never fired. He continued to work. And also the head of officials said in that story that that specific head referee was not at fault for the calls, that he was just basically sat down because it was his crew and because you're in charge. And I'm assuming that, I mean, if I were judged on every story I wrote in 2002, there'd probably be some clunkers in there I'd like to have back. I'm assuming that over the next 15 years, he and his crew did something to warrant getting that national game assignment. Now, having said all that, that crew had a bad game on Monday night. That's the long and short of it. I don't think there was, like, any favoritism towards one team or another. They whistled Alabama and Georgia for the exact amount of calls on the block punt. I think that unless I'm missing something on there's some neutral zone infraction deal that Simmons went through, and no one's told me I am, I think that was the wrong call. But that flag is going in the air as the, you know, before Simmons is arriving and blocking the punt. So that's not a situation where they're like, oh, we got to keep this game close. You know, now let's throw a flag. So I think, I just think they had a bad night. I don't think there's any question about that. And it's tough for Georgia. It really is, because you look at some of those plays and they really could have turned the fortunes of the game. I mean, if that Simmons block stands, Georgia's got a 13-0 lead, you know, in the red zone and a chance to punch it in. And even if you just settle for a field goal, 16-0 at that point would kind of seem insurmountable. And, you know, but on the other hand, there wasn't anything on the final play. Georgia just really got outplayed in the fourth quarter. They couldn't do anything on offense in the fourth quarter. Alabama couldn't really be stopped until the red zone in the fourth quarter and in overtime. So it's something that you look back on and say, yeah, you know, bad breaks, some poor calls that went the wrong way. But, yeah, like you said, I mean, there's really nothing you can do about it anymore.
So I'll admit that I was on the field for those final 5 minutes the way the media is allowed to be. And when I thought that Alabama was about to win the game in regulation, I found myself having to take my phone out and start scrolling back through, like, the drive chart data to even figure out exactly how we sort of got to this point that Georgia was about to lose a game in which, for a lot of the game, it seemed like it was well on its way to winning. I'll admit that the end result ultimately sort of snuck up on me. Now, Alabama didn't win in regulation. They won in overtime, but the result was the same as it appeared to be with about 2 minutes left to go in the game. What was your feeling kind of watching the sort of late third, early fourth quarter unfold? Did you see this slipping out of Georgia's hand as it was happening, or was this sort of an after-the-fact revelation for you as well?
I don't think I realized this was going to happen, that they were going to – that it was really slipping away until Alabama got that ball to have a chance to tie it on as it was 20-13. That drive, I don't remember. I think that may have been the one time Sony Michel touched the ball during that last stretch, was that drive when Georgia got the ball after Alabama had to settle for the field goal, and they go three and out again, and Alabama's going to get the ball back, and you're like, ooh, you know, this is real. Here it comes. And, you know, even then, on the fourth down, where, again, that could have been a false start call on the Alabama receiver, but it wasn't – the more I looked at it, it wasn't egregious. It wasn't, like, you know, obvious the way that kind of the block punt was. But even then, if that pass is incomplete, then there's still enough time for Alabama to get a three and out, force a punt, and get the ball back. Pretty good field position. So – it was kind of slipping away at that point, but, you know, then you get after the missed field goal, you just kind of think, well, you know, how many times does this happen that a team misses a field goal and then the other team wins?
Yeah.
It usually goes that way. it was just kind of an amazing way it turned. It was like the Oklahoma game. Wild swings and a comeback, and this time Georgia was just on the wrong end of it.
I like the line that you used in your second glance piece where you said that Sony Michel almost became a bystander in this game. Obviously, he had some big plays, and then it seems like for some Georgia fans there wasn't enough of him in those kind of crucial stages. And you did a good job kind of laying out what Georgia did do offensively in the fourth quarter, and it just looks like the offense just kind of stalled there, and ultimately that leads to the Alabama victory. In terms of the way that Michel is used, though, is that the kind of thing that Jim Chaney should have realized in the moment? Hey, I've got a hot guy here. I've got a guy that's having success, and stick with him. Or is that the kind of thing that's sort of only more apparent after the fact, that the Chubb plays were ineffective, the Michel plays were more effective? Is that easier to see in, I guess, retrospect, or is that the kind of thing that Chaney should be able to notice in the moment?
I think that if we ever get a chance to talk to Jim Chaney about it, and it may not be until August, and you bring it up, I think this would be one of those instances, and because he's always been kind of a, you know, buck stops with me, stand up guy. I think it's going to be hard for him to say anything but, yeah, I'd like to have that back. Because the thing was, Sony wasn't even on the field a lot of these plays. DeAndre Swift was actually on the field for several of these plays, and not even Chubb. Maybe in the heat of the moment, in the fourth quarter, you're trying to run out some clock. And you think Chubb's your best guy, but then you get the ball back with a couple minutes left in regulation with the game tied, and then in overtime. I think those are both instances where you just do have to say, well, what plays have been working? And the one time they were a little more creative was on the Mecole Hardman run down the stretch there, and he got 8 yards, but he was stopped a couple yards short, and then the next play failed. There were on a couple of those passes, I think Sony was on the field for one of those. It just was, the play was snuffed out pretty quickly. You know, and for all these recriminations and everything, and I'm participating in it too, I mean, you do also have to give credit to Alabama.
Yeah.
I mean, Georgia ended up, you know, when you look at the context of the way it happened midway through the third quarter on, I understand where the slings and arrows are coming from, but Georgia did, against that Alabama defense, end up with, 365 total yards, which is pretty good. I think if you'd said before the game, you're going to get 365 yards, you'd say, we'll take our chances. But obviously the bottom line is winning the game, and winning the game was there for them, and that's something they weren't able to do.
You had a really interesting stat also in the second glance piece about Isaiah Wynn, and I lived through this. I guess the numbers still surprise me, though. 19-2 is his ultimate record as a starter for Georgia at left tackle. That's a tremendous career. I don't mind telling you, I do think as football prospect, Andrew Thomas may be a superior football prospect, but boy, he's got a lot to live up to moving to that left tackle spot. I mean, how do you gauge Thomas's readiness to kind of slide over and be in a role that Isaiah Wynn filled so capably this season?
I think they feel pretty good about that, considering the way he played at right tackle. And there's no, I mean, I asked Sam Pittman that last week at National Championship Media Day, and he was pretty upfront. Yeah, we're moving Andrew Thomas to left tackle. There was no, well, let's see about spring, let's competition, yada yada yada. No, they said we're moving him to left tackle, which I think that's a sign of confidence in his ability to do it, that they're saying that is going to be what they do rather than compete or any of those other things.
Right. Riley Ridley has a big game in the national championship. If Georgia wins, this is the kind of thing that, you're writing stories about for a long time because of the irony of the fact that he's playing against his brother. There wasn't as much of Ridley during the season as we might would have thought. Any chance that Ridley takes that momentum from a big finish into his junior season?
I mean, look, he slid into Javon Wims' role when Wims couldn't come back from that shoulder injury, and look what he did. So I mean, when I get around to doing my look ahead depth chart to next year, I'd slide in just him into the Wims role, and you're kind of three starting receivers if you're looking at a three receiver set, or Ridley and Mecole Hardman and Terry Godwin.
Yeah.
And then, you know, probably a big drop off to the next group because, you know, of playing time. I mean, who else would you put there? I actually did talk to James Coley a little bit. Not about, I mean, I talked to him about Ridley, but I talked to him in general about the receiver group for next year. And there are some guys who have a chance to kind of move up in spring, and preseason will be important for them. But it certainly looks like those are your three, Hardman, Ridley, and Godwin. Pretty solid to start the year.
I want to finish with a DeAndre Baker question. He's obviously facing a decision. You kind of touched on that a little early in the conversation. I didn't see the TV broadcast. I've got it recorded. I guess I'll watch it at some point in time. But, boy, apparently Kirk Herbstreit was really throwing some praise Baker's way. I think he's been a good defensive back for Georgia. There's no question about that. I guess I was a little surprised at just how effusive Herbstreit was in his praise of Baker. I mean, do you think that he's a potential really high NFL draft pick? Is that kind of either what you've seen or what you've heard?
Well, I mean, everyone knows Calvin Ridley is. So when he threw in DeAndre Baker in with him, it was that was notable to me. I don't know how much he's getting that talking to Mel Tucker or Kirby Smart or, you know, his own, like, NFL analysts or whatever. But here's the way I would look at DeAndre Baker. Now, I don't know if he's going to go pro. I really don't. But DeAndre Baker, if we had we kind of – people out there might poo-poo him as a first-round pick or even a second-round pick or a guy that might go pro because – of our perception of him coming into the year, which was, okay, yeah, he's the number two cornerback, but, you know, or the number, you know, maybe he, you know, he's okay. You know, he had a nice sophomore year. If we went into the year looking at him differently as a potential star lockdown cornerback, we would be sitting here going, yeah, he's probably going pro because he had that good a year. He was, I mean, I watched all these games. I'm sure there were some completions on him, but there just weren't big ones. And it seemed like any time the ball went near him, he had to play cover. And we all know what happened on the other side of the field on the final play of the game.
Yeah.
And that was on a senior and a senior safety. But DeAndre Baker had a really, really good year. And if he does come back, I think that's really good for Georgia because they had in him this year something approaching – and maybe really a lockdown cornerback.
Hey, Seth, really good stuff. Thanks for your time here on Dog Nation Daily. Appreciate all your coverage of the college football playoff. It was a lot of fun to read. We'll look forward to speaking to you soon.
All right. Thanks, Brandon.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, good stuff there from Seth Emerson. Really interesting. You know, a lot of what we kind of focused in on was that that second glance piece that he had written, because I thought it was pretty detailed and kind of a good final postmortem on the national championship game. I know some of y'all already just kind of turned the page on that. I do get that, but I thought a lot of what Seth wrote was pretty important, at least to kind of touch on. And interesting stuff there on DeAndre Baker. And I imagine the days ahead, we're going to talk a little bit more about some of that. You know, Baker coming back to Georgia would obviously be good news for the Dogs. I don't know that I quite think he's as good as Kirk Herbstreit might think he is, but I do certainly think he's good, and I agree with Seth that it's certainly good to have him back in the fold for 2018 if Georgia can. I think it's interesting that Jonathan Ledbetter right now, at least based on what he said, is coming back for his senior season, barring, I guess, a last-minute change of mind for him. That's also big news for Georgia. And then you'll kind of play the wait-and-see game on Trent Thompson. I really don't think there's a wait-and-see for Roquan Smith. I mean, as much as, obviously, you know, Georgia fans would love to see one more year of number three on the defense. I mean, this guy's a top 15 pick, and that's a lot of money, and that's not the kind of thing. I think that you just don't move up the draft by coming back for another year. So Roquan's probably no decision to make at all. Some of these other guys, hey, we'll see how it goes as they kind of weigh what's best for their future there. It'll obviously be something worth paying attention to because there's no denying that the decision of Bellamy and Carter and even to a certain extent Aaron Davis and Dominic Sanders, obviously Nick Chubb, Sonny Michel, them coming back to Georgia clearly helped Georgia for 2017. And if some of these guys for Georgia this year decide to come back, that's obviously going to be a kind of a big thing as well. As we start our SEC through here, by the way, I'll also remind you that Dog Nation Daily brought to you in part by our friends at Kroger. Of course, Kroger, known for the Kroger click list now. Listen, you know, we're all busy, right? We're all trying to get places, do things, and we want everything to be done in the most efficient you know, time-managed way as possible. That's what Kroger ClickList exists for, to get you in, get you out of your Kroger with exactly what you want and the time that you need for it to do. You can go online, Kroger.com, find out more about it, get signed up, get your ordered online, and then show up. You don't have to get out of your car. The Kroger folks come over and they deliver it to you right there. So Kroger's been a great sponsor and a great friend of us here at Dog Nation Daily, and we would invite you to check out the Kroger click list. I'll also really quickly also squeeze this in, too, that Seth was talking about that Purdue student newspaper story about the officials in the national championship game going back to 2002. Some of y'all had sent that to me. I read that yesterday. I actually tried to go back and read it again today online, and I don't know if it's been pulled down or what, but I tried to get into it from a couple different browsers. Couldn't get into it. But I think that, you know, that Seth is probably right, that in some respect that story from 2002 has probably been misconstrued a little bit. Certainly reprimanded, maybe not fired, but clearly an officiating crew that had some problems in the national championship game. Just as a fan, I'm left to wonder, what do you do about it? And it's almost, for me, helpful not to dwell on it because of the fact that there's really no recourse for what you may have thought were some calls that go against you. And I understand that some of you have been a little critical of me because you think I haven't talked about it enough. But I did want to at least ask Seth Emerson about that today. By the way, speaking of SEC news, since we're 4 minutes in the SEC through, we should probably talk about the SEC stuff here a little bit. Damian Harris is returning to Alabama, leading rusher of the Crimson Tide, coming back. You know, listen, Alabama's always going to have a stable of running backs. Harris going to be a part of that group. I think that in 2018, you're probably going to see a lot more of Najee Harris, the other Harris there for Alabama. So Damian coming back is good news for the Tide. But I think that Najee Harris may be the best running back on that roster next season. Thought that Ian Rappaport, an NFL analyst, had an interesting line. We're going to play this audio for you on SEC Country Live later on today. Rappaport, and talking about future NFL offensive coordinators, the name that he mentions is the current Crimson Tide offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll. Daboll had been the tight ends coach of the New England Patriots, came to Alabama this year. He's the reigning national champion. Bit of a hot name because everybody watched him on TV on Monday. Rappaport says that he could be in line for some NFL offensive coordinator jobs. Maybe that's the case. The Tide's last offensive coordinator before Daboll, Steve Sarkisian, after one game, obviously bolted to the NFL. So that's what's out there for Daboll. This sort of feels like grasping at straws to me. I don't know if there's any real team connected to this actual name, but Rappaport's putting it out there. He's throwing against the wall. Maybe we'll see if it sticks. By the way, speaking of sticking, there's a big old billboard sticking to a sign there in Tuscaloosa, some UCF fans. As a fact, if you're watching the video, we have the picture for that right now. Travis Ryer from 24/7 Sports puts this up. It says, "Congratulations, Alabama. How about a home-and-home series with the UCF? Listen, I don't fault the hustle, if you'll pardon that phrase. I don't fault UCF for doing this kind of stuff. I guess it's actually UCF fans who do this in this case. But I can't help but think back to what Florida State, you know, in the Bobby Bowden era of the 80s, when this program was becoming good, you know, its motto was anywhere, any place, anytime. And if you want to build a program, and Bowden essentially built Florida State from nothing, I think that's the attitude you have to acquire there. Not the, hey, we'll play you as long as you do home and home. It's any place, anywhere, anytime. And UCF, to its credit, kind of did that. It beat Auburn in a bowl game. That's a real level of credibility. But this kind of stuff is earned slowly. You know, I think some college football programs think they have a right to exist just because they want to. That's not how the market works, and this is still a business. By the way, something else we'll play for you today on SEC Country Live is Scott Frost taking a bit of a shot at Nick Saban, saying that, you know, putting Tua Tagovailoa in, he should have, over the course of 12 games, recognized that Tua was the better quarterback over Jalen Hurts anyway. This Scott Frost, man, he enjoys himself some Scott Frost, and my prediction is he's going to go to Nebraska and never be heard from again. But right now, he feels like he is the toast of the town. So I hope he is enjoying his 15 minutes. One more quick story to get to for our SEC through. John Chavis, the former Tennessee, LSU, Texas A&M defensive coordinator, was announced and introduced as the new defensive coordinator to Arkansas. He gave his introductory press conference yesterday and spoke of the possibility of Arkansas winning a national championship. I do think Arkansas almost qualifies as one of these sort of sleeping giant type programs. I think they could be in that category, maybe a little smaller giant than some, but they're obviously a long way away from that kind of competition. And to Chavis' credit, he did acknowledge that himself. I think that when you look at 2018, you know, Arkansas has had a really bad recruiting cycle, and it's going to take a while to sort of build that roster in the image of Chad Morris, the new coach, who's diametrically opposed to what the old coach Brett Bielema was. I think you're in a scenario in 2018 in the SEC where you may be hard-pressed to find a lot of contenders. I think Alabama, Georgia, Auburn are all three pretty good again. I think that LSU is nowhere near as good. I think that Tennessee and Florida still struggle. I think Arkansas is really bad. I think there are going to be a lot of bad teams for the handful of good teams to really beat up on in the SEC in 2018. At least that's my early read on the league anyway, and we'll make that your SEC through. And now here on Dog Nation Daily, you know, our build-up towards National Signing Day is going to continue now through February as we kind of pay attention to those final or recruiting spots that Georgia still has left. We're not quite sure how many additional players Georgia can add because we don't quite know what to make of some of Georgia's public commits who didn't sign during December. How many of those still intend to come to Georgia? Well, we don't quite know that yet. Georgia's obviously looking to add some elite players, but Georgia's not the only one chasing some of these guys down. I thought it was kind of interesting to see a little bit coming out of Florida here over the last couple of days about Dan Mullen, who, you know, made some saber rattling in the direction of Justin Fields at one point in time. Now maybe trying to do some of the same stuff with some of the other players as well. Florida's procured a official visit with Quay Walker, the linebacker from Crisp County, who's currently an Alabama commit. There is some thought out there that Walker may flip from Alabama. I guess Auburn's still in the mix here somewhat, too. At one point in time, Auburn was sort of thought to be his leader. Maybe now, if you believe what's out there a lot, maybe George is the leader here. Even though he's the current commitment to Alabama, Florida, I guess, is secured, according to Zach Albaverde from SECCountry.com, the final official visit for Quay Walker. I think this may be one of those things where, in Walker's case, that final official visit may not ever happen. I think that, you know, he's got other visits coming up. He's got a trip to Georgia coming up. I believe it's next weekend. I hope I'm getting that right. But one way or another, you know, I think Georgia's going to look to try to sew things up with Quay Walker before the Florida visit ever officially takes place. I think that Georgia's in a battle for Walker. I wouldn't put Florida among the teams that that Georgia's battling with the most. I also thought it was kind of interesting on Florida with another Georgia recruit, Tommy Bush, who Bush actually caught up with Zach Albaverde to talk about his relationship with Florida. He says, I was talking to them before, and then when they went to Florida, meaning Dan Mullen and his staff, we just sort of picked up for there. He says Florida does have a shot, but there are other schools we've been talking to longer. It kind of sucks because it's so late in the game. So Florida trying to make a bit of a push here with Tommy Bush, the four-star wide receiver, but it sounds like, much like a lot of scenarios for Florida, Mullen kind of coming in a little too late for a lot of these prospects. I know that that Bush is still considering Michigan State, still considering Baylor. If you look on the 24/7 Sports crystal balls, most of the predictions for Bush are for Baylor, but most of those go back to early December before the early signing period opened up there. So Florida trying to get in on Tommy Bush, trying to get in on Quay Walker, maybe a little too late for Dan Mullen, but the Gators still going to try to put a class together. All right, and I guess the other thing that Zach Albaverde kind of reports that was kind of interesting is that maybe there's still an outside chance that Florida could put in a top 10 class here for the 2018 cycle, which would be different than what Jim McElwain did in his first year of 2015 when the Gators didn't even finish in the top 20. You know that when it comes to sort of my suspicions about Jim McElwain, almost all that was sort of born out of what I saw were McElwain recruiting failures. In terms of Dan Mullen being better at Florida than Jim McElwain was, a lot of that's going to depend on how much better he is as a recruiter, and we'll watch between now and February to see how that's the case. By the way, speaking of Florida, 289 days from right now, we think Georgia heads back to Jacksonville for another renewal of the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. We think Georgia wins again. We talk about it every day. It's our Gator Hater Countdown here on Dog Nation Daily. Why do we do it? Because we believe a good Georgia fan is a Gator hater first and foremost. Good to have you with us in the program today. Back again at 10 a.m. tomorrow. We'll talk to you then.